Andy Korn. Beans, beans, the musical fruit. The more you eat, the more you toot. The more you toot, the better you feel. So let's have beans for every meal. I ate my beans and they were loaded. Went to bed and they exploded. Beans, beans are good for your heart. The more you eat, the more you fart. The more you fart, the better you feel. So let's have beans for every meal. Beans, beans, the musical fruit. The more you eat, the more you toot. It was the most important meal of my life. Everything. Every step I would ever take, every person I would ever know, every lover, every victory, every embarrassment, everything. It was all being charted over a simple Kentucky Fried dinner one night in 1978. I was nine. If I failed or hoped or resented or aspired, it's over one linoleum table, one fall night in Ponderosa Court in Fayetteville, North Carolina, that I can trace the course of my life. How does a nine-year-old boy decide he's going to Hollywood anyway? Well, I'll tell you, it's beans. Beans. Beans make me sick. Literally, the sight of them fills me with a nauseous, wet dread. And the smell of them, why, that's the smell of freshly plowed acres in hell. How does a 32-year-old man grow up so enraged at a simple legume? Well, the answer is Hollywood. Much the same way that a serial killer fuses mother hatred with whore strangling. For me, the hatred of beans and a love of Hollywood remain inextricably intertwined. Hollywood, beans, beans, Hollywood, Alpha, Omega, beans, Hollywood, dinner, dinner, dinner. Friday night, September 1978. My mother had a cockamamie idea. To put this in its proper context, the idea was, I learned much later on in life, conceived over a fat marijuana cigarette with a bunch of her bowling biddies at the local B&B bowling lanes. See, Mama Cheech was feeling experimental this week. She wanted us to be a real family. To sit down, to have supper, to talk. It was a last-ditch effort to save a really awful marriage, and she wanted to do something special for my father, Sergeant Major Sherman Bernard Corrin, who we called behind his back Sergeant Major Aspen. The sergeant was home that day from active duty, his biannual visits to get my mother pregnant and knock our heads together for setting fires were not welcome. We hated him. My mother didn't love him. My brothers didn't respect him. I just didn't like him. Him and his Bronx accent and his addiction to eating chili peppers right from a jar. So we were joined in this rare family moment by my father's flame-haired mother, my exotic Nana Minna Katzkin Cohen Katz. It's a mouthful. And her second husband, Joe. Minna Katz scared the poop out of me with her white wine spritzers, her Pall Malls, and her salad bowl haircuts. And Papa Joe's visits seemed mainly to be a daily hide-and-go-seek with his missing dentures. Their yearly trips up from Miami Beach were planned around her need for cheap North Carolina cigarettes, our need for fresh fruit and haircuts, and we just didn't like her much either. But she didn't like the sergeant, so we had that in common. There we were, hating each other, all hating her son. My mother smoked a joint, and one night we did something we had never, ever, not once had ever done before, eat around a table without TV. Our special dinner consisted of the kind of food you would expect from a slightly overweight stoner chick with a bad case of the Primo Tennessee Bud munchies. Kentucky Fried Chicken, Winn-Dixie bacon syrup rolls, a frozen Pepperidge Farm layer cake, four bottles of Pepsi, potato chips for after, when we would gather together for the only thing that truly made us happy, the Donnie and Marie show. Ironic, isn't it? An emotionally tone-deaf, white trash Jewish family drawn together each week by a clan of musical, affluent, cloying Mormons in sequins. Though it seemed a little unfair, week after week, watching the Osmonds cavort with Paul Lynde or Stephen Eady or LaBelle, while the Corins may do with the retarded son of a family friend or a neighbor Gallo brothers who became strippers and called themselves U.S. Mail. The Osmonds, for all their saccharine sweetness, gave us Corin's hope. They acted like a real family. They were rich. They had a choreographer. So I guess it could happen to us was the not very rational thinking. I came to the table very skeptical. Who are these people who talked to each other? And how could this talking be sandwiched in between the bionic woman and Donnie and Marie? The first mistake was leaving it to my mom, Lady Bongwater, to direct the flow of talking. Minutes into this, our first and last family dinner, she was giggly and chatty and glassy-eyed. She spilled things. Everything I said was the funniest thing she had ever heard. Her mother-in-law was right, absolutely right about everything. We were indeed the world's worst Jews. She was completely baked. But in her defense, on this night, she managed to look out over our family dinner with something resembling pride. It's the same look you give your used car when you slide in that tattered front seat that says, "It may not be pretty, but it's paid for." I was the youngest, so I was squeezed in between my Nana Minna and my sister Kathy. Huge mistake. In war, everything is about position and tactics, and I had foolishly aligned myself with two people my father would never back down from and were sure to antagonize him. Across from me were my four otherwise unremarkable brothers, and there's my sister Kathy next to me, the oldest, and soon would wisely be spreading her wings and flying this nest. Unbeknownst to any of us this September night, she was busy spreading more than just her wings. Weeks from this meal, Kathy would run away pregnant to West Virginia, have a baby boy, get divorced, get married again in Virginia Beach, have another baby boy, get divorced again, tie her tubes, lose an eyeball, get married again in North Carolina, raise miniature chihuahuas, and become the chocolate fudge queen of Kill Double Hills, North Carolina. With so much on her mind and so much ahead of her, I couldn't count on Kathy for help this year. At the age of 9, I have never eaten a bean. I, who come from big-boned, loud, gassy Jewish people, was convinced that eating beans made you fat. I theorized that I was smaller, runtier, faster, and less smelly than my family because I had never eaten a bean. And my dislike for them was accepted family myth, like crazy Aunt Pearl who occasionally wore a beach towel over her head so nobody could see her throwing up in glad Ziploc bags, and then saving them for office doctor's visits that were months and months away. My hatred of beans, long and unyielding, was okay with everyone but the sergeant major. He was pissed off about something that night. Jimmy Carter, Iran, gas lines, my mother shutting down the pussy machine. I don't know. He was pissed off. And he was out to get me. Mom passes me my plate, wisely arranging a drumstick on one side, a bacon served roll holding the center line, and a dollop of mashed potatoes on the other side. I was always very anxious about not mixing my food flavors and plating food correctly. I raised the drumstick up to my mouth, looking up just in time to see the sergeant major's glare. He's looking
right at me. He's doing something. He's talking to me.
Why aren't you eating beans, Andrew?
It's the first shot. He calls me Andrew. Nobody calls me Andrew. This is gonna get ugly. So I say, with a big showbiz smile, because, Sergeant Major, I don't like beans.
Beans are good for your heart, Andrew.
From behind the veil of grease and spite that is my brother's comes snickering. Though we all share a common fear of the Sergeant Major, none feels happier than when his attention is focused on another. So they laugh. I try logic. There's nothing wrong with my heart, Sergeant Major. I have a healthy, normal 9-year-old heart, sir.
Take some. Now!
The sounds of chewing, slurping, and plastic clapping against plastic falls into a dull murmur as all eyes swivel to what is happening in Sector 8. But I don't eat beans, Sergeant Major. I have never eaten a bean. I say it proudly, like it should be obvious to him. My mother, all this time making slow, stoned mouth love to a bird carcass, has missed the beginning of this scene. So busy is she sucking the marrow out of a leg bone. I see her glance shamefully in my direction and cast me aside coldly, leaping vulture-like back onto a heap of bone scraps she has scavenged. Desperate for her perfect family moment, my stoned hellhound of a mother can't see that it's already more Orwell than Rockwell. I am abandoned. My plate is whisked from me. Oh, and it was cruel. I dropped my drumstick into a pile of mashed potatoes, and I hate mixing food flavors. Before it's passed along by a grinning, greasy brother conveyor belt up into the Sergeant Major's callous, chili pepper-stained hands. Then he uses the arguments, the age-old sand and lies that have frozen children's hearts for thousands and thousands of years and destroyed parents in their eyes. Just eat some beans, Andrew. It's no big deal. Just have a little bit. It won't kill you. And when you're finished, you can have your chicken back. And then suddenly, a bolt from the blue. Leave him alone. He doesn't like beans, Father. It's Kathy. My sister in shining armor has pulled herself out of contemplating her many future divorces, babies, and lost eyeballs. And she called him Father. Nobody has ever done that before.
This is none of your business, Catherine. Zip it!
An original recipe pall descends like a lead curtain over our dining room. He called her Catherine. Nobody has ever called Kathy Catherine. He has vanquished her.
Sherman, it's Nana Minna. She has the strength of a fury itself. And if anybody can stop this madness, it's...
Mother! Shut the fuck up!
Then he turns back to me.
Andrew will eat his beans. Then he will be excused from the table.
But Sergeant Major, beans, they make me...
They do not make you fat!
But, I get sick of it.
You start eating your beans. Now.
But I don't want...
I beg your pardon?
I don't like to argue. I don't.
It's 1 o'clock in the morning. Everyone has forgotten me. Mom and the sergeant got into a fight over my Bataan bean march. And Mom left with my brothers to see Big Bad Mama and Death Race 2000 at the Fox Triple Drive-In. Papa Joe's teeth fell out in the garbage disposal and he went to bed, inconsolable. My plate of uneaten beans has taken on epical proportion, growing larger and larger with every passing hour. I've fallen asleep in my chair several times, the smell of brown sugar sauce coated doom, dreams of bloody picnics and attacking tin cans waking me every time. The aroma of Van Camp's has seeped into my clothing, my hair. Most of all, my stubborn rebellion has cost me all of Friday Night TV. No Little Bit Country. No Purple Socks. No Jamie Summers. Why go on? A light flips on in the kitchen, and Nana Minna pokes her head inside the dining room.
You're still here. That bastard, your father. How could something so rotten come from these?
I don't know, Nana Minna.
Why are you still here?
Because I don't like beans.
No. Not here, son. Not this dining room. Why are you still here in North Carolina?
I live here.
Give me the plate. And Nana casually takes the plate. Just like that. Plate I've been held hostage to for the last 8 hours, marches it into the sink and drops it with a clatter.
And even though she's his mother, I'm sure the sergeant major is going to burst through the door of the dining room any minute in a hail of gunfire and grenades and disembowel her right there on the floor.
Move over, son.
The merciful smell of white wine spritzer and palm oil gold blots out the pork and beans.
Do you know how old Donnie and Marie were when they started in show business?
No.
They were 9 and 10 years old.
Oh.
Do you know how old they are now?
No.
About 18.
Oh!
How old are you, son?
I'm 9. And in a minute, I'll be 10 in March.
9. Why don't you have your own show, son?
Because I'm 9.
Donnie and Marie have their own show, so why don't you have yours?
I don't know. I'm tired. You threw my beans away, and I didn't eat them, and the sergeant's going to be mad and think I did it. He's going to cut you like a fish. And
Andrew, I can handle your son of a bitch prick father. What I'm trying to get you to understand is you have a brain in your head. You got balls enough to stand up to that Garneth, my soon-to-be ex-son. You're stubborn, you're talented, you should have your own show.
I'm afraid of her my whole life, and dismissive of her alien Jewish culture. I had never had cause to listen to Nana Minna before, but her crazy logic switched on a light, brighter and barely than the kitchen light, but it popped on. I was tired and confused, yes, but I had just spent 8 hours huddled over a congealing plate of disgusting beans because of my father. If I was Donnie, or Marie, or Shields, or Darnell, or Sid, or Marty, or any of the Partridges, I wouldn't have to eat beans. I wouldn't have to sit at a dining room table if I didn't want to. But how? How?
Let me tell you about my late sister, your Aunt Frances. Frances was a show business manager who was married to a joke writer, your Uncle Gig. She worked with lots of girl singers. Kate Francis, Tony Fields. A little girl named Rosemary Clooney.
The coronet lady?
Yes, son. The coronet lady. So, your Aunt Frances set your father up once on a date with the coronet lady.
Did they like each other, Nana Minna?
I don't think so, son. Even then, your father was an asshole. But that's not the point. You have show business in your blood.
In my blood?
In your blood. You can't escape your destiny, son. That plate of beans in the sink in there, that's just a minor obstacle. A bump in the path. If you want to be like your Uncle Gig and Aunt Frances, you have to anticipate where the beans are going to come from next. You have to stand up to the Sherman Bernard assholes of the world.
Do you think you can do that? Yes, no, no. I do.
Then tell me, why don't you have your own show yet.
Is this the part where you make me eat beans because they're good for me and it'll teach me to be strong?
No, son, I'm not gonna make you eat those filthy trace beans.
In a minute, is the reason I don't have my own show yet because I didn't see the beans coming?
Really are smart. Just like your Nana.
Should I eat them in the future?
Will it help you get a show?
Maybe. Nana tears a piece of paper from the Kentucky Fried Chicken napkin and scribbles down an address for me.
You write your Uncle Gig. You ask him how many plates of beans he had to eat. You tell him you want your own show and you need some advice.
Taking the ripped napkin like a communion wafer, I initiate, for the first time in our relationship, a kiss to Nana Minna's liver-spotted cheek. I love you, Nana Minna.
I love you too, son. Now pass me my cigarettes and go to bed.
Drifting off to sleep, visions of sequined backup dancers and Johnny Carson's couch playing in my head. I made a promise to myself that night. I would move someday to Hollywood, and I would never eat a bean.
Unless
it'll make me famous.